Hello out there. Welcome to your next Mission Video podcast. PTSD, TBI, addiction, and other mental and physical wounds of war sometimes need merging therapies to achieve the desired results of wellness. Today, we'll be speaking with the head of an organization that is providing those therapies with great success. You won't want to miss this one. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Your Next Mission Video Podcast, where we tell the stories of those who have served in the past and those who are serving today. From transition to financial wellness, VA benefits to mental health, we cover issues facing veterans, active military, and their families. Now here's your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley.
Thanks for joining us, and thanks to all of our veterans and service members and families for your service to our great country. Now, before we get started, I personally want to thank our presenting sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, whose members are the mission, and Purdue Global, where you can start your comeback. With additional sponsorship from Blue Cross Blue Shield, FEP Dental, and Blue Cross Blue Shield, FEP Vision, and USAA, together they make your next mission happen. They love our veterans and families, and I always say it, we love them too. Today, we're going to be talking about the various merging therapies available to our wounded warriors. And I'm excited to introduce Marcus Capone, U.S. Navy SEAL veteran, make sure I got that correct here, and co-founder and chairman of the Board of Veterans Exploring Treatment Solutions, also known as VETS. VETS has been nominated, I guess, for a Charity Navigator Community Choice Award. So Marcus, congratulations on that, and thank you for coming on our show.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks, Sergeant Major. Thanks for having me today. I am grateful for the opportunity. I believe it's important to speak openly about our mental health, which we're going to cover today.
Absolutely.
If I can reach an individual who's struggling, then I think you and I, we've done our job. So I'm excited that we're going to speak on the topic.
There you go. Hey, before we get into the discussion here today, Mark, would you tell the audience just a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I just, I say 30 seconds out of college. I was a scholarship quarterback in college. I enlisted in the Navy. When I graduated, I spent 13 years on active duty. Most of my time in the SEAL teams at SEAL Team 10 and Dev Group. And the last few years, I was a first phase BUDS instructor. And I also ran close quarters combat at the tail end of my career.
Oh, wow. You stay pretty active, I guess, all the way through there. And you're still staying active, that's for sure. You know, the vision of VETS is to envision a world where veterans have access to the most advanced healthcare options when it comes to treatment of mental and physical wounds of war. Please tell us about the vision established. How do you establish that? And some of the things that you're doing to make this vision come true, I guess.
Yeah, well, Sergeant Major, I think we should start with my story. It's really how we got here today. Mm-hmm. And so, on active duty, I spent 13 years on active duty. I was retired in 2013. And really, a lot of individuals struggle when they separate. I started having some issues in 2008, 2009, started seeing my first psychologist, and I was prescribed antidepressants. In 2010, I stayed on those antidepressants for 7 years straight. And I was really struggling with a host of symptoms. I was having some anxiety attacks, ended up in the emergency room, thought I was having a heart attack. Oh, wow. I was struggling with severe depression. You mentioned it earlier, PTSD. I don't know what we're supposed to call it. We're supposed to call it PTS or PTSG. Whatever you want to call it, is obvious that I was dealing with it. I did have some imaging on my brain that showed obvious TBIs, and they were affecting my day-to-day. I was angry. I was irritable. I couldn't sleep. I was isolated. I was emotionally upset for no reason. I had trouble focusing. I lacked some attention. Really all the things that you read and you hear about from service members, whether it's multiple training cycles or coming home from multiple tours overseas, I still think we're trying to figure out what the issues are. But, I had access to and really tried everything that was made available. And I wasn't making progress. And like most, I was actually getting worse as these different treatments, I'd say these traditional approaches to treatments wore on. Long story longer, my wife Amber had been working in the background with a friend and a doctor, Dr. Kirk Parsley, who was a SEAL and went to med school and came back. Another individual, Mikhail Vega, and another close friend and former SEAL that I can't expose, but that did 30 years on active duty. And for me, they had sent me to a vetted emerging therapeutic retreat in Mexico that had been operating for almost 20 years. And these treatments that we'll talk about today, it was, for me, it saved my life. You know, it was life changing. It was life savings. It kept my family together. And, you know, the first thing I said to my wife when this was said and done, she came and visited me. I didn't say I'm better. I just said, hey, this is exactly what the guys need and we need to help more. And so we started a nonprofit called VETS, Veterans Exploring Treatment Solutions. And to date now, we're going to close in on treating or funding for treatment 1,000 individuals through our nonprofit.
Oh, wow. You know, a lot of things you talked about, I went through this. I think I told you on the prep call, I went through the same thing. You know, I'm an old tanker, armor guy, but I was overran, 20 wounded, 7 killed. So I didn't realize for the longest that I really had PTSD. I thought it was just, you know, war changes all of us inside and out. And you don't know why it changes you. And you try to figure it out, but it's certainly tough. And for me personally, it never goes away. It's always going to be with you. You just got to, I guess you got to figure out how to adapt to it and how to, you know, not lose control with it and all that other stuff. So it's tough. I think one of the main causes that inhibits veterans from achieving wellness after service is their inability just to, you know, just to move back into civilian life. Would you talk about, I mean, for me, I know it was a struggle. I'm not sure about you, but it was a struggle just to move back into the civilian community.
Yeah, Sergeant Major, I mean, I want to hit on something that you said, that it never goes away. Yeah. I think what goes away is our ability to deal with the quote-unquote emotions that come from the stuff that we experienced from the past. And I think as a young individual, it's more difficult to deal with these issues as they come up. You don't know how to deal with them when you lose a friend, a close friend, a best friend. You know, and you go through a host of other things. And I also think a lot of the experiences we've had during our military career in wartime, et cetera, I also think it spurs up a lot of issues that we may have had from, you know, a childhood or multiple childhood incidents or the way that a person has been brought up. And so it seems that when we transition out of the service, a lot of these things come to a head. You know, being busy definitely helps. But being busy, there comes a point where you have to deal with some of the stuff that is affecting you. And so, you know, I tell people there's not a day that goes by, and I know you feel the same way, that you don't think about many of the things that you could have done over or could have done right while you were serving. And it's very difficult for the civilian population to understand that and to try to put themselves in your shoes. And they know, you know, we have such great Americans and such great individuals now that helping us transition out, you know, they try to get in our head and in our lives and figure out what this individual is going through so they can really help us. And so I really think that's important. But, you know, the question is, you know, what would you talk about, you know, I guess that inability to fit in civilian life? I think there's a lot of different steps and we can talk about this for hours, but many of us, when we were in the military, we joined for different reasons. Serving is exciting. You know, there's purpose, there's mission,
absolutely,
there's brotherhood, sisterhood, whatever you want to call it, but there's family, and there's always it's always servant leadership, and you could always pick out the individuals that were selfish, right, and weren't there for the team, and that's a quick one. And you know, they either assimilated to what was needed for the mission, or you know, they moved out, and there was plenty of individuals I saw that, you know, got in our world, in my world, you know, that you got this trident when you got through training. It showed that you made it through BUDS and you got to your team and or your platoon and you proved yourself and you got pinned this trident. I saw individuals have those taken away from them because they were individuals or they couldn't figure out with the team. And I think when you're part of such a tight unit and then you leave that unit and you step off into the private sector can be a whole different world. I tell individuals that, you know, a lot of my friends that are getting out, kind of had it made from one perspective. You know, when you get out, depending on what kind of job you do, it may be, you know, you eat what you kill type of job. It wasn't that way in the military. You had different levels, of course, that you were ranked and that you got paid. But if you worked 20 hours a day versus even 4 hours a day, you got paid the same thing. You didn't make more money. You know, it was a different type of mindset. And when you get out, if you do step into a profession that says, hey, by the way, you're not going to get paid, or we're going to pay you a little bit just to get by, and then depending on how you perform is how much we're going to pay you after that. And so the difference there is you really have to hustle in certain, I would say, in certain professions. And so I think a lot of veterans, service members who transition out, it may take a lot of time to get that mindset of, here I was in the military. Yes, I worked really hard. I never got rewarded in terms of, you know, economic value, and no matter how hard I worked. And again, coming from my world, we worked hard all the time. We worked long hours. Never thought about a paycheck. That didn't concern us. That's not why we're there. We're there for mission and purpose. But when you separate, it's a different story. Many individuals get out because they do want to make more money. They do want to provide for their families. They do want to support their kids and their grandkids. And so it's a completely different mindset. And it's really difficult for many making that shift from being on a team and doing something that is so rewarding for you and your country. And then now you're out. And it's kind of like, well, now I'm doing this for myself or my family. And, you know, there might be just, there's definitely a bit of struggle there. I think there are definitely professions that the transition is a lot easier. And for me, I looked at the job as everything. And when I got out, you know, I jumped into jobs that were exactly what I'm talking about, mm-hmm. you know, kind of eat what you kill. And, you know, I see transitions such as, you know, going into firefighting or going into law enforcement, maybe working for the U.S. government. You know, these are easier transitions, I believe, because you're potentially working with similar like-minded individuals. And so the transition could be easier. But individuals like myself who've completely changed roles from, you know, wearing body armor and running around the mountains of Afghanistan or the streets of Iraq, and then working downtown in Beverly Hills in banking, they're two totally different professions, two totally different mindsets. And, you know, just like I did, many individuals struggle with that. Yeah. And so.
Yeah. No, I'm just going to say a lot of the people that come on the show, they talk about just finding their tribe, finding where mm-hmm. they fit in, finding people that have the same kind of likes and dislikes and understand exactly what they're talking about. So I think that's really important. The other thing is that, some people never find their tribe, never find where they fit in. And then the last thing, going back to one of the comments we made earlier here, when we talked about PTSD, I think as you get older, for me, I'm just talking about myself, as you get older, it's a little more of a struggle, because I look back at some of the things I seen or did that I wish maybe I wouldn't have done. I wouldn't have been there if I could have got out of, I guess. But I think I struggle a little bit with that. But if I'm around other people, I'm around my tribe, it allows me to express myself, and I feel a lot more comfortable around the other service members I get.
Yeah, I mean, I think the tribe is everything. Yeah. And again, the tribe was easier when we served, because your tribe, absolutely. As soon as you got to work, you're with your tribe. You're with your family. You're always there. You work out in the morning, you know, you do your work in the afternoon or whatever it is, you're always there.
Yeah.
In the transition, like you said, you may not have that tribe. You may get a great paying job and, you know, supporting you and your family. But where's that tribe, right? So now you got to go join a CrossFit gym, you know, try to get some individuals that you may be like-minded with, or go join a club that, you know, biking or whatever it is, right? I think it's just finding individuals that have like-minded, do like-minded things like you do. And one of my mentors once told me, he said, Marcus, you know, you got to stop trying to find your excitement and that what you had before in a job. They said, you know, go do your job, figure out what's going to, you know, put food on the table and pay the bills, but you're going to have to go find it elsewhere. Because if you don't, you're going to have a real struggle, because you're not going to find it in the roles that you're doing now in at, you know, where you're employed.
Well, it's hard to release some of that stuff. It's behind you and you're doing something else, so you got to move on. Hey, how important is this to tell your story? I mean, you're telling your story right now, but it's important for all of us to tell our stories so our veteran community understand exactly what's going on. Is that a big part of therapy, or does that help people to tell their stories?
I think it's a huge part of it. I mean, you said as soon as you get with your tribe, it's much easier to open up and you guys can start, you know, kind of locker room talking back and forth about what you did. And it's just much easier. And the more we talk about it, the more, I mean, that's just it. You know, the more you can get it out, the more you can write it on paper, the easier it's going to be off your mind and the better you're going to be. I'm a big believer in that. I do believe people need to tell their stories. And like everything else, there's people telling their stories. There are people that can overtell their stories. But here's the thing. For instance, in the 90s, there was a movie. And again, I want to go back to my community just because that's where I came from. Yeah. Many individuals went to the SEAL teams because that movie came out in 1990, I believe, called, I think it was Navy SEALs, right? Mm-hmm. Martin Sheen or whatever. If that movie was about the SF or Marines or whatever, many individuals that went in the SEAL teams would have done that, right? So here's a movie, like you're talking about telling a story. They told a story that individuals watched and go, oh man, I want to do that. Just like I did. I read every single book I can find on the SEAL teams in Vietnam that from individuals that served in Vietnam. And each book I read, the more excited I got and the more focused I was in you know, reaching my goal of becoming a naval special warfare operator. And so if you would have handed me, or if I would have handed something else on another unit or another part of the military, that's what I would have done. And so for me, I am grateful and thankful for the individuals that got out, told their stories, wrote those books, because that's what persuaded me to go do what I did. And so going back to the initial question, I think it's extremely important to tell our stories. And again, there's a way to tell your story where it's acceptable and people understand it. And you're not, I don't like when individuals tell a story and think they're the only ones that have been there and done that, because, you know, there's many of us that have been there and done that. And I think you can tell it in a way that are helping other people. I feel like I've done a pretty decent job in being a servant leader and saying, hey, this was my story. I struggled. Here's what I found. And now let me tell the world, because if there's one person that I can reach to raise their hand or call us or go find, you know, treatments to help themselves, I think that's the best part to all of this. And so, you know, we need to tell our stories.
For a couple of reasons. One is, I think it's therapy for you to tell the story. The other thing is educate our country about the things that go on, because there's just so many people. And then, of course, in the field that you was in, there's a lot of stuff you couldn't talk about. You couldn't tell people about, even though you talked about your friend at 30 years as a Navy SEAL. There's probably a lot of stuff he certainly can't talk about today, that's for sure. Marcus, during the next segment, I want to dig a little bit deeper into the therapies of your organization, is, you know, providing our wounded warriors. But first, like everything else, we got to take a break. So don't go, I know you're not going to go in. Stay right there. We'll be right back. This is Your Next Mission Video Podcast with me, your host, Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant of the Army. If you're enjoying this discussion, and I know that you are, because we're talking to a warrior that loves this country, that wants to do all they can to help our veteran community, whether or not you're Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Space Force, or whatever, but it's about all of us helping each other. Please like us, click on that subscribe button below, and be sure to click on the bell to receive notifications of all of our upcoming video podcast releases. I'll be right back after a word from our presenting sponsors.
You're watching Your Next Mission Video Podcast, proudly presented by Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. And Purdue Global. You're ready for a comeback, and with Purdue Global, you can do more than take classes. You can take charge of your story, of your career, of your life. Earn a degree you can be proud of and get an education employers respect. Start your comeback at PurdueGlobal.edu. Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Hello out there and welcome back. We're talking with Marcus Capone, co-founder and chairman of the Board of Veterans Exploring Treatment Solution, also known as VETS. Before we get back to our discussion, I'd like to just take a few seconds to tell you about a program we're excited about called Your Next Mission VCS. It's a veterans community support program. We'll provide personalized one-on-one support to address the unique needs within our veteran community, facilitated through other, you know, other partnerships with other veteran service organizations. Please check us out at yournextmission.org/VCS and enroll to participate today. Remember, we want to help you with whatever your issues you or your family are facing. So please, I'm not just saying that, please reach out to us. Marcus, let's dig a little bit deeper into the essence of the VETS program. What more can you tell us about that? What are you about your programs?
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, the program was born out of my own struggles with the, you know, current approaches of medicine, the traditional, if you want to call it the status quo. And so many or almost all of the friends I have that have had, you know, struggles with traumatic brain injury or PTSD, the protocols are traditional antidepressants and talk therapy. And there's a ton of different talk therapy. The problem is most of those, there's greater than a 50% chance that a person drops out of those programs because a lot of them are just, they're very difficult to reach an individual. The same thing with antidepressants. What we're found out about antidepressants is that, you know, they only work for maybe 30 to 40% of the population. So what are we doing with the other 60 or 70% that are not getting better? I mean, if I told you you're going to the doctor to fix your knee and there's only a 30 to 40% chance that it's going to get better, would you go back to that doctor?
No.
Would you continue on with that treatment?
No chance in heck.
Right?
That's right.
Right. And so that's the thing that's going on right now with mental health is that, you know, on the high end, maybe 50% of the individuals are getting better through the current treatments that they're offering at the VA or a lot of these commercial solutions. And so we've kind of been we've been stagnant. We haven't had a treatment, a real successful treatment for PTSD for over 25 years. I don't think we've developed a better antidepressant in over 30 years. There's a lot of work that's happening, but there's still not a lot of individuals that are getting better. And as you know, our mental health, we call it a crisis, not just in the veteran community, but it's in the U.S. population, the global community is skyrocketing for obvious reasons, social media and all these other things. And so, VETS was born after my failed treatments and what I found to be successful. And what was successful for me and what the research is starting to really show. And I don't love using this term because it's so stigmatized, but we're getting better at it. Psychedelic therapy is poised to be the future of mental health care, and it's the future of these, you know, 60 to 70% of individuals that aren't responding to these treatments. Psychedelic therapies are working. We'll dive in a little bit about psychedelic medicine. One, in many cultures, they've been used for thousands of years. So this is just kind of like a normal medicine that these cultures in the U.S., Native American cultures in South America, in Europe, East Asia, have been using for many, many, many years for all types of ailments. It wasn't until the 30s and 40s in the U.S. that we started really researching these drugs as a potential solution for PTSD, for anxiety, for depression, for substance use disorder. And they got abused in the 50s and 60s with the countercultural population. What we did is we took drugs that were intended for healing and we used them as recreational drugs. And you know, we can go on and on about that. And what it did was halt research for about 50 years because we just shut it off because it was, you know, it was kind of growing, growing like a weed and it wasn't being controlled really well. And we had the Vietnam War going on at the same time. We had a bunch of counterculture folks doing psychedelics. You know, the U.S. government didn't really know how to react. And so we just shut it down because that's the quickest and easiest thing to do. Say, hey, we really don't know what's going on here. Let's just halt everything. The problem is we halted the research and we started researching these drugs because of the power of what they were doing to the individual to heal from these different traumas that people are dealing with. And so many of the antidepressants that we're getting put on, Sergeant Major, are just they're covering up the symptoms of everything that we're dealing with. So if I'm depressed, these antidepressants, they're trying to make me not depressed, but they're really not getting to the root cause of why I'm depressed. Or if I'm having these anxiety attacks, if they do work for me, they're covering up some of those symptoms of anxiety, but they're not getting to the root cause of why I'm having this anxiety attack. Why do I have PTSD? Why do I have trauma that's causing all these things? These antidepressants don't do that. Now, talk therapy is supposed to get to the root cause of these, but as you know, it's very difficult. We just talked about it earlier. Opening up, you know, I'll open up to my tribe, but how am I supposed to open up to a therapist or a psychologist that I really don't know?
You don't trust.
It's very difficult. And maybe you do trust that person, but the research shows it could take years to trust your therapist, where psychedelic therapy, the molecule itself could really get in there and it can open you up almost instantaneously to be able to deal with a lot of the issues that you're struggling with. And so that's the power, is that, you know, these are just catalysts for the work that you'll do afterwards, but they allow you to open up and they allow you to get to the root cause of the issue extremely fast. And then, of course, like everything else, that is not going to solve your problem overnight. You do need to put in the work afterwards, but you're able to open up and understand and experience, why am I having these problems today? And now let me figure out how to deal with them afterwards. And I think that's why it's so exciting, is because some individuals have literally seen, like myself, for 7 years, but others 10, 15, 20 years of talk therapy and not getting any better. I mean, I think we call that crazy.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So, you know, these have to be looked at as just a tool for us to be able to access in order to get past the things that we're dealing with. And that's all. You know, if we can regulate them, you know, and, you know, be able to use them in a way under, you know, medical supervision, we're going to find a lot of individuals are going to get better. We're going to reduce veteran suicide, and we're going to, I believe, reduce mental health crisis overall.
Yeah. Go back over. How does psychedelic therapy work again? Make sure I fully understand it. Maybe the audience should understand. Yeah. Just.
So if you and I were in a session and I was your therapist and you were the individual and you had some PTSD, as you just said before, it's hard for you to even trust me. So if I said, Sergeant Major, why are you dealing, you know, why do you think you're upset, or why are you having these anxiety attacks? You go, well, I don't really know. You know, and you're saying, like, here's this guy, Marcus, who's trying to do therapy with me. I don't really trust him. I'm not going to tell him about this childhood incident that I had. I'm embarrassed by that. Or I'm not going to tell him about my best friend I lost in wartime, because who the heck is he? How is he going to understand what I'm really going through? And so here we go. We're playing this game for weeks, months, years, you know, and I'm trying to get to the root cause. You're not going to open up. What the psychedelic does, it forces you to open up. The drug just, it breaks down certain barriers in your subconscious called the default mode network and, you know, our ego. These are things that protect us, and they're good. They need to protect us in certain times, but they also don't allow us to be able to revisit some of these traumas or some of these incidences that we really need to. The drug actually forces the individual to break down these barriers and allow the person to come forward with some of these traumas that they may be stuck in their subconscious. They may not even know that that's what's affecting them, but they start to come out. And that's the power of these medicines, that they come out and the person's able to deal with them. And you and I both know the only way to deal with a problem is to deal with it, right?
We
got to talk about it. We got to work through it. You know, we got to sit down with our child and say, hey, why did you do this? Like, let's talk about it. Let's get over it, because we get over it, we can move on and we'll get better. And that's the only way to do it. Yeah. That's what these medicines do. So that's what they allow us to do. They allow us to deal with the situation. And as you can imagine, some of that can be uncomfortable, right? You know, I read your bio. I know you lost your best buddy that you entered the military with. You know, that may be affecting you, Sergeant Major, from years and years and years, but it's something that you don't want to talk about, or something that you never thought. You're like, yeah, you know, we served together and it was war and that's what war is supposed to be like. But all these little things are happening in your life. You don't know why they're affecting. It may go back to that incident to say, you know what? I need to deal with this. Like, I need to deal with Johnny. Johnny and I were good friends. I watched him die. It really affected me. I need to get over it. It wasn't my fault, you know? And that's what these medicines do. It helps you get rid of the guilt, the shame, I could have done better. It should have been me. All these things that we're really struggling with on a regular basis. It helps us just realize that it's okay. We got to forgive ourselves. It's in the past. And hey, let's move on. We got a bright future ahead of us. We got a family to raise. We got work to do. We got other leadership to be involved in, and other great great things we can do in our lives and for the other generations. So let's do that, and let's not harp on the past. That's why these medicines work so well. And another thing we got to remember, it's not just one drug, Sergeant Major. So you got to think of this as, right now there's over 300 clinical trials going on with that many different substances. So they're, think of it as a headache. You go to the doctor and you get written a prescription for a headache. It could be migraines, it could be cluster headaches, it could be, headaches from a TBI, they could be tension headaches. You got ibuprofen and Tylenol and Excedrin, and you got a host of them that you inject yourself. So here we have 10 to 15 different ways that we can get rid of our headache, but it depends what kind of headache we have, right? That's exactly how these medicines work. You got depression, anxiety, you got deep trauma, you maybe got mild trauma, you got alcohol use disorder, different drug for different cause. And so we just have to, that's how we have to look at these, that it's just not one tool for the job.
Yeah. What types of psychedelic medicine have been most effective in the veteran community? Is there one that's been more effective than anything else?
Well, there's a few right now that are ready to come through the FDA. So MDMA and psilocybin are two that are extremely close. Within the next 2 years, they will be FDA approved, meaning a service member will be able to go to a psychiatrist, an integrative clinic. They would they would have a full diagnosis. They'd probably go through a bunch of different medical intakes and see if they even qualify for the treatment. If they qualify for the treatment, they would go through the treatment with that doctor. They would do several preparatory sessions with a therapist before that treatment. They would do the treatment with the doctor, and then they would do several integration sessions, as they're called, afterwards. And they may do that back and forth for several times before the person gets better. But we have MDMA being one of them. The FDA is taking it through for PTSD. Psilocybin is going to follow MDMA. They're saying psilocybin is being studied for a depression or major depressive disorder. There's a study that vets did with Stanford. The study there was done on a drug called Ibogaine. Ibogaine is showing to be nothing better for any type of alcohol use or drug abuse. So, for instance, a lot of individuals who are addicted to opioids, synthetic heroin. There's nothing better that a person can take outside of Ibogaine to get that person off of their drug addiction. Now, again, these are drugs that can be extremely dangerous when done not in a medical setting. And I just want to reiterate that individuals, when they're listening, they should not be seeking out these on their own and just doing them underground or searching for them in places that are not vetted. And so that's why, it's going to be really powerful and great once these drugs get through the FDA. But right now, they're still being studied and we're still waiting for them to come through. So MDMA for PTSD, psilocybin for depression, Ibogaine is being studied for addiction and for traumatic brain injuries. And then there's just a few others.
Yeah, I, this is probably a dumb question. How long will it take them to get through the FDA? How long will it take them to get through the FDA? I mean, because it always takes a long time. And, it's really...
It does.
Yeah. Do you have any idea?
Yeah. Unfortunately, it takes over $100 million to take a drug through the FDA.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole nother conversation about the pharma industry. But, they have to do, phase one clinical trials, phase two clinical trials, several phase three clinical trials. It has to be safe. It has to be effective. And then it has to get, blessed by the FDA. So there's a long process, and every drug that we've used or every medical device that we use has to go through that process. And sometimes some of these companies go outside the U.S. because the road to success is a little bit faster. But we have a very strict policy here on what we can offer individuals that are looking. So that's why I went outside the United States And that's how VETS works. You know, we can't fund individuals in the U.S. We fund these individuals to go outside the U.S. to vetted retreats and clinics that are operating in legal environments.
So you can't do anything in the U.S. right now at all?
The only thing we could do in the U.S. right now, and we have written many grant scholarships, is IV ketamine for treatment-resistant depression. And so treatment-resistant, again, I go back to 30 to 40% of those individuals are going to respond. The other 50, 60, 70%, what do we do? Ketamine is showing to be the fastest acting antidepressant that we have access to. It's also the number one drug to give somebody if they are suicidal, if they have suicidality or suicidal thoughts. There's nothing better. And so, you know, we do have access to some things here in the U.S., but the majority of the I would call the heavier psychedelics, we still have a year or two before these get approved and veterans have access to them.
Yeah, the worst thing I used to tell people in the Pentagon, I worked at the Pentagon, you talk about it, and then finally we approve it. So it takes 10 or 15 years. So it's really a shame. Tell us about some of the outcomes and maybe some of the success stories that you're seeing as you work with the other veterans.
Yeah, well, just, you know, I'll speak on our program with VETS. We have a really tight run program. I feel like we have kind of world-class programming. An individual would, they would apply online, and we get, you know, we get hundreds of applications a week. We get upwards of 10 applications a day sometimes and more. So it kind of gets racked and stacked in terms of, you know, how severe your symptoms are, how many combat deployments. I mean, we've had to come up with a system to make sure, you know, individuals who need it are at the front of the line, but we have a really long waiting list, and that's unfortunate. It's because we just don't have the access right now, but, you know, we do the best we can, but, individual applies, they get, if they get accepted into the program, they get connected to a therapist. That therapist has been trained in psychedelic therapy. We call it psychedelic integration. So they are licensed therapists, but in this regard, they're acting as coaches, meaning that they can work and talk about psychedelics from a coaching perspective, not necessarily from a therapy perspective, because they do have a license. That individual would go through 1 to 3 preparatory sessions before the actual treatment. The treatment lasts usually from Monday to Friday. We have several vetted retreats that are set up, and we would send this individual on a Monday, usually with 5 or 6 other veterans. And it's, you know, it's really a, they're almost in a clinic, but we call it a retreat because there's just a lot that goes on this week. There's medical screenings. There's nurses there. There's doctors there. There's therapists there. We try to make the individual as comfortable as possible because these aren't normal experiences. This person's going into they're going to a trip, and those trips they're going to experience potentially some really difficult, parts of their life that they're going to revisit. And so you want to prep this individual before they go do that, because some of these can be very traumatic for individuals to experience again. And so they do the work before they go to the retreat. The retreat's about 5 days. They do intakes, they do blood work, they do urinalysis. You know, individual can't have anything in their system. There are contraindications with these drugs, so we have to do a good job in terms of the intake and preparing the individual. They usually do the treatment on a Tuesday evening, and that Tuesday evening will last about 6 to 8 hours of kind of peak experience. They go into about a several hour reflection phase where they kind of reflect on that peak experience that they've had. Usually they're pretty wiped out the next day, and so we let them do whatever they want. They sleep, they can watch movies, they can go work out. Mostly you sleep. You may get up to eat a little bit, go to the bathroom, but you're pretty wiped out physically and mentally. Many individuals, what they call purge or throw up and puke during the experience. Some of it can be sickness from the medicine. Others can be, I think you've seen it when there's been like traumatic events that go on and people see something and then they throw up because they can't kind of, that's what goes on during these experiences. So they may revisit some of these traumatic events and all of a sudden just kind of lose it, right? And some of that is good, though. They're like, you know, kind of purging the stuff that they need to get it out and move on. And so their body is just wiped out the next day, mentally and physically. And then Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you said you've had about 1,000 people go through your program. Is it mostly Navy? Is it a variety of people?
It's everything. We're getting more, I would say, more than 50% Army now that's coming through our programs, just because we've built partnerships with many different organizations. And so it would started out with, you know, me and my friend group and my tribe, and then that extended, of course, to, hey, I have this Marine that needs to be treated, or I have this SF guy that needs to be treated.
Are these mostly operators? Are these mostly operators?
Yeah,
so the 1,000 people probably mostly are operators from all services.
From all services, yeah. 100% from all services, and spouses. And now we have individuals from the UK coming over, from Sweden coming over. You know, there's just everybody needs help, and, you know, they don't know where to go, right? So when they hear something that works, you know, we just get a ton of inbound. So we have to manage all this. And so this week, this full week, and by Thursday, Friday, this individual just feels a lot lighter. They feel a lot better. They come in on Monday sometimes, can't even look you in the eyes because they're so dark and they're so kind of, you know, I don't want to call it term damaged. They're just, you know, they're just not doing well. And on Friday, they're smiling. They're glowing. They want to live again. They want to talk again. They want to see their spouse again. The change is literally, it's 180 degrees. And so every time you see that, you just go, wow, this stuff is really working. We just need to keep going. We need to keep working on legislators on the Hill. We need to keep doing these clinical trials, and we just need to keep funding research and keep funding individuals who are interested in going to get treatment. Because like I said, many of them are not finding healing through traditional approaches.
Yeah.
So, hey,
Marcus, when we come back, you know, of course, we got to take another break. When we come back, though, I want to talk about the data that you're seeing in the research and how it's supporting the VETS program. So, you know, unfortunately, this is a great discussion. Don't change it. Don't go anywhere. Stay right there. We'll be right back. Now, here's a word for two more of the organizations that help make this show possible.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, brought to you in part by Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision.
Part of transitioning out is that dental and vision insurance breaks off from your medical insurance.
Vision and dental is very important to be able to enjoy your retirement.
Blue Cross Blue Shield makes a transition so much easier.
And USAA.
A promise is a trust not to be broken. Whether spoken with an oath or sealed with a pinky. And after 100 years, we're still taking care of the military community and their families. That's our mission, always.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're blessed to be here today with Marcus Capone, co-founder and chairman of the Board of Veterans Exploring Treatment Solutions, also known as VETS. Remember, this is your show. We know there's so many issues that directly affect you, and we want to address each and every one of them. So please, as I said before, I've said a lot of times, reach out to me. Tell me what topics you'd like us to cover. You can call or text me at 844-424-1134, or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. And guess what? I'll reach back out to you. Marcus, for any program, especially wellness programs, data is, you know, the real measure for success because the data drives change. What are you seeing from the best partnerships with research institutions?
We do need data, like you said. You know, evidence-based care is what everybody wants to hear and what they want to see. And so, you know, initially all these treatments start out as anecdotal stories. I mean, that's what gets them into these clinical trials. But, you know, the anecdotal stories only go so far. And most of the folks in the medical community, you know, want to just say, you know, show me the data. And so I think initially with VETS, we didn't do a great job of capturing data, but now, you know, we've partnered with Ohio State. We've done a study with Stanford. We've doing work with Johns Hopkins and Columbia and others. You know, we are now setting ourselves up to be successful by pairing the data with the anecdotal stories. And so the more data we can collect to show how an individual is getting better, what they were before these treatments, what they're like after these treatments, that's what's really going to move the dial. You know, real world evidence is great, and that's what we're doing. Real world evidence being that the individuals that go to these retreat centers, if we can collect some kind of data and show improvement before and after, that's called real world evidence. But the clinical data, you know, the double blind placebo studies that happen during clinical trials, you know, those, that's the gold standard. And so we do as much real world evidence as we can collect. That's for the clinical trials that have to happen to take these drugs through the FDA. And so, you know, the more we can lean on data, those are, you know, those are the answers to the questions that the decision makers are asking.
Yeah. Marcus, I'd like to put some of the links of some of the studies in the lower thirds for those in the audience that are interested in access. Would you talk about some of those studies also?
Yeah. So we finished a study with Stanford, the Stanford Brain Stimulation Lab there with Dr. Nolan Williams, who runs that department. We put 30 special operations individuals who had mild or traumatic brain injuries. These individuals were on a host of medications. Some of these individuals had attempted on their lives, and you know, it was a the study was to see the effects of ibogaine on the actual brain to see if it actually physiologically you know, helped the brain out in certain ways, where we were trying to figure out, you know, why these TBIs were affecting individuals, why they were depressed, why they had anxiety, why their quality of life was bad. The study results were just truly remarkable. The study's published in Nature magazine. I believe it's the TBI ibogaine study with magnesium. Unfortunately, I don't have the exact the exact link to it. But you know, it's an interesting study that you can see how well an individual progressed before they took the ibogaine and then after. And I think what's remarkable is that the study also involved imaging of the brain, so fMRI imaging, and it showed that not just right after an individual did their treatment, but after 30 days, the individuals actually improved and their symptoms improved. And so, you know, we need to do a lot more research, but I think, you know, these initial results are promising. We're also in the middle of a 3-year study with Ohio State. It's a retrospective and study on, you know, all the individuals that have gone through our program. And so we're trying to look at all the data from the individuals that have been part of the treatments, you know, several years ago up until you know, present time.
Marcus, if somebody wants to enroll in the program or really learn more about it, you know, how do they do that?
Yeah, they could. Individuals can go to vetsolutions.org. There's a ton of resources on our website. There's a course that an individual can go through, an e-course, where they can learn a lot about these treatments that you and I talked about today. They'll go way more in depth. It's a truly remarkable course that we've built for kind of the layman, for everyone to understand, you know, where these initially how these treatments were developed and where they're going and what they're being used for specifically. But that's vetsolutions.org. There's also a site on a link on there for an application. So if individuals are interested in pursuing these treatments, they can go ahead and apply. As I mentioned earlier, the waiting list is long. So I just tell everyone out there, please be patient. There's nothing we can do about that. There's only so many resources that we have, and there's only so many vetted retreats and clinics that we operate with safely. And so, you know, I never know how long an individual is going to wait when they're pursuing these treatments. And so you and I both know when an individual's struggling, you know, they need help now. And, you know, we try to serve men and women as fast as we can, as best as we can.
First of all, Marcus, let me say thanks a lot for being on the show. Any final thoughts, anything you want to bring up or say that maybe we missed that you want to share with the audience?
know, I just want to say that, you know, we're doing everything we can, and that there are, you know, there is hope. There are tons of emerging treatments that are, I believe, that are coming. We're seeing the success of you know, modern emerging therapeutics such as psychedelic therapy. I think we have, you know, people don't want to be patient, but we have to be patient because, you know, we want to do this the right way this time. We don't want this to end up like it did in the 60s and forgotten about. Like, we have such a pivotal time with the increase in mental health issues that are arising for our veterans and for our populations. And so, you know, we just need to be patient, but we need to also be hopeful that we'll have access to these life-changing treatments in the near future.
Yeah. One of the things I've said to a lot of people, we talked about this subject quite a bit on the shows, but is we need to, you know, we're really trying to put a Band-Aid on the problem. What we ought to start doing is talking about it at the beginning. When you first go into the service, when I first went into the service, we should start talking about, you know, what may happen to you as you go through war with PTSD and TBI, some of those other issues. Now, whether or not it's got to help, it should be able to help a little bit more, but I think we need to start doing something a little bit sooner. You know, well, anyway, I want to thank you for what you're doing to keep up the good work. And certainly if I can ever help you in any way, I'm right here. I'm easy guy to get a hold of. And I know that you are too. So I appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, Sergeant Major, thank you. And I agree with you. I think, you know, if we talked about it, you know, figuring out a way to talk about it could, you know, potentially help the individuals as they're transitioning out, because many individuals are going through these for so many years, not realizing the symptoms or the struggles that they're having could have been something maybe that we addressed, like you said, early on, that, you know, could potentially spark their interest in getting help a lot earlier before it's too late.
Yeah. And there's there's a lot of guys like me that never got any help with anybody. They just sort of worked through your issues. Because you're talking about 60s. I'm one of these guys in the 60s that come back, went through that, went through a lot of issues for a lot of years, but was lucky enough to probably nothing bad happened to me or nothing else. So I've been, I guess, pretty fortunate, but there's still a lot of people out there struggling.
No, there is. And if we can prevent that, that's the idea here, right? If we can get that, so you don't have to struggle for 20 or 30 or 40 years. Like, you know, my wife always says, you know, you got half your life to live when you get out of the military, and you should be able to live that to the just most awesome time of your life, you know, when you're done and not have to struggle. And so if we can get to you early, get you fixed, and get you on your way to living a more fruitful, better life, then that's what we want to do.
Yeah. Oh, thanks a lot, Marcus. And the Army says hooah. I don't know, you guys don't say hooah, but I say hooah.
I think we used to say hoo-yah in training.
And then I know
if you say that when you got to your team, then you get hit for that one. So it was only in training, though. That was the only time you said it.
Hey, thanks again. I appreciate it. Thanks again to the Vets co-founder and board chairman, Marcus Capone, for being with us today. I'm Jack Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. You've been enjoying Your Next Mission video podcast. And thank you for joining us. Log on to our website at yournextmission.org. And I always say, leave me a review. Hopefully it's a good review, but if it's a bad one. But we want to make sure you give us some comments so we can make this show better and better, better for all of us. While you're there, you can visit our nonprofit and corporate partners who have jobs and services available that can assist you in your transition from the military. Check out our job board and partnership with the Recruit Military, where you can search for the job that's just right for you. Please go to the website to watch a short video that will help fine tune your search and where you can create your own personal profile. You can also follow me on my personal social media pages. Never thought I'd ever say that. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, and Rumble. And if you like what we're doing at Your Next Mission, please, please click on that subscribe button. We can't get this done without you. We want to help you. And don't forget to click on the bell to receive notifications about our upcoming video podcast. Don't forget, we want to hear from you. Leave me a message or send me a text at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Thanks again to Marcus for coming on the show. And Marcus hit on so many points. I don't know if I can cover all of them or go back and really say anything other than what he said. All of us struggle. All of us go through problems. He talked about the 60s in Vietnam. I was in the 60s in Vietnam. And I've said this on the show a bunch of times. I've struggled for 50 years. Now think about that for a second. Nobody reaching out. Nobody helping me. But helping myself. You don't need to do that. There's people there that want to help you. There's people there that love you. That want to do all they can to make sure that you have a good and a productive life. You know, it's about us. It's about country. It's about the fact that you raised your hand and said, I will protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. That meant that I was willing to die for your freedoms. I've said that a lot too. Or take a human life for your freedoms. And sometimes that stuff stays with us for forever. But remember, you're not alone. We're all together. So reach out to us. Thanks for watching. And thanks to Newmont Studios and, of course, our sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue Global, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, and Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision, and USAA. We appreciate all you do for our military. And as always, see you on the high ground. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.